Welcome to the Peer Reviewed Politics Podcast. This is a peer reviewed politics news update from the first half of the year. A federal judge obstructed ICE agents. The Southern Poverty Law Center got indicted for allegedly funding the KKK. And Senate Republicans are calling for their own leader to step down. Today, we're breaking down the biggest political stories from January through June 2026. What they reveal about our shifting political landscape and the implications heading into the second half of the year. Let me bring in our political analyst to dive into what's been a truly unprecedented 6 months.
Thanks for having me. And you're right, this has been absolutely wild. Let's start with what might be the biggest story in conservative circles, the growing calls for Senate Majority Leader John Thune to step down. This came to a head on March 27th when Representative John Rose from Tennessee publicly called for Thune's removal after the Senate rushed through a funding bill that ended a 43-day partial government shutdown.
Wait, so Republicans are calling for their own leader to be removed? What exactly happened with this shutdown?
The shutdown was severe. According to White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt, roughly 50,000 DHS employees went unpaid and nearly 500 TSA officers quit, triggering nationwide airport delays. But here's the kicker. The compromise bill that Thune engineered with Senate Democrats funded most of DHS except ICE and CBP, the immigration enforcement agencies.
So they ended the shutdown but left out immigration enforcement? That seems like political malpractice for Republicans.
Exactly. Rose told Newsmax host Todd Starnes that Senate leadership was capitulating to Democrats and abandoning core Republican priorities. He doubled down on X, blasting what he called the Thune-Schumer DHS deal and noting that any single Republican senator could have stopped it, but none did.
And this is where the filibuster debate comes in, right?
Right. Critics argue Thune could have passed a Republican-only bill by eliminating the filibuster. And here's what's interesting. Democrats have repeatedly signaled they would pursue this if they regain unified control. Former Senator Kyrsten Sinema even circulated a list of Democrats who have supported eliminating the filibuster.
So Democrats are openly campaigning on weakening the filibuster, but Republicans won't use that same strategy?
That's exactly the frustration. Even AOC was blunt about it, saying, "The same Dems who argue to keep the filibuster for when we need it do not, in fact, use it when we need it." When the Senate sent their bill to the House, Speaker Mike Johnson called it a joke, and House Republicans swiftly rejected it.
And voters seem to be responding to this frustration?
Absolutely. In the May 5th primaries, several Republicans who opposed the America First wing were defeated. Dan Dernulk, Linda Rogers, Travis Holdman, James Buck, Greg Walker. Spencer Deary barely survived by 3 votes. Other high-profile losses since March include Dan Crenshaw in Texas, Bill Cassidy in Louisiana, John Cornyn in Texas, and Thomas Massey in Kentucky.
That's a significant shift. Now let's talk about something that sounds almost unbelievable. The DOJ investigation into Washington's women's prison. What's happening there?
This is a major civil rights investigation. On May 19th, Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon sent a formal notice to Governor Bob Ferguson that the Justice Department is examining whether Washington's Department of Corrections has allowed a pattern of constitutional violations at the Washington Corrections Center for Women.
What kind of violations are we talking about?
According to the DOJ's letter, they're investigating allegations that the state failed to protect female inmates from sexual and physical violence, harassment, voyeurism, and intimidation by male inmates who identify as female and were transferred into the facility.
So this is about housing biological males in women's prisons?
Yes, and the DOJ is looking at whether this created systematic failures. They want to know if risk assessments were conducted, if staff concerns were ignored, if allegations were properly investigated, and if state officials knowingly maintained policies that increased the likelihood of harm.
This investigation is being conducted under CRAPA, right? What does that mean?
The Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act authorizes federal intervention when inmates' rights may be systematically denied. Historically, CRIAP cases have resulted in binding agreements that overhaul staffing, housing classifications, surveillance systems, and inmate safety protocols.
Now let's move to what might be the most shocking story, the Southern Poverty Law Center indictment. This organization has positioned itself as fighting hate groups for decades.
This is absolutely stunning. On April 21st, a grand jury in Montgomery, Alabama, returned an indictment charging the SPLC with 11 counts of wire fraud, false statements to a federally insured bank, and conspiracy to commit concealment money laundering.
What exactly are they accused of?
Between 2014 and 2023, the SPLC allegedly secretly funneled more than $3 million in donated funds to individuals associated with violent extremist groups, including the Ku Klux Klan, Aryan Nations, and the National Socialist Party of America. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche said, "The SPLC is manufacturing racism to justify its existence."
Wait, so they were publicly condemning these groups while secretly funding them?
That's the allegation. FBI Director Kash Patel stated they lied to their donors, vowing to dismantle violent extremist groups, and actually turned around and paid the leaders of these very extremist groups, even utilizing the funds to have these groups facilitate the commission of state and federal crimes.
How did they allegedly hide these payments?
According to the indictment, the SPLC established a web of bank accounts tied to fictitious entities, shell organizations designed to obscure the true nature, origin, and destination of donated funds. This layered financial structure allowed them to quietly route donor money while maintaining the public appearance of a legitimate nonprofit.
The irony here is just incredible. Let's shift to some economic news. How has the Trump administration been performing economically in the first half of 2026?
The numbers are pretty remarkable. The U.S. trade deficit narrowed sharply in January, falling 25.3% from the previous month to $54.5 billion, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis. A major driver was a 5.5% jump in U.S. exports, a gain of $15.8 billion that pushed total outbound shipments above $302 billion.
And what about jobs?
The United States added 147,000 jobs, beating expectations for four straight months. But here's what's really significant. Native-born workers now account for all the job gains since January 2025. Foreign-born employment has fallen by 543,000 workers, while native-born citizen employment has increased by 2.079 million.
That's a complete reversal from the previous administration.
Exactly. Under the Biden administration during the same period last year, foreign-born workers accounted for more than 48% of new jobs. The Treasury Department also reported that blue-collar workers have seen real wages grow almost 2% in the first 5 months of Trump's second term.
Speaking of economic policy, let's talk about what happened in Washington state with their income tax. This story is almost too perfect.
Oh, this is beautiful. On March 6th, the Washington State House took up a bill establishing a tax on millionaires. After one of the longest floor debates in state history, more than 24 hours straight, it passed 51-46, strictly along party lines with eight Democrats breaking ranks to oppose it.
And then what happened?
Here's the kicker. Democrats had insisted during floor debate that wealthy residents wouldn't leave the state. Well, it wasn't much more than 2 hours after the vote that Starbucks founder Howard Schultz announced he was moving his family to Miami. You just can't make this stuff up.
2 hours? That's incredible timing.
And he's joining Jeff Bezos in Miami. According to CNBC, Bezos will save over $600 million in taxes with his move. If Governor Bob Ferguson signs this bill, Washington State will have the highest taxes in the United States, and it will mark the largest tax increase for two consecutive years in the state's history.
Let's talk about New York for a moment. Governor Hochul has been making some interesting appeals to wealthy ex-New Yorkers.
This is pretty embarrassing for her. In a Politico interview, Hochul was essentially begging wealthy ex-New Yorkers to come back after previously telling them in 2022, like President Trump, to jump on a bus and head down to Florida because they don't represent her values.
So now she wants them back?
She said, "Maybe the first step should be to go down to Palm Beach and see who we can bring back home, because our tax base has been eroded." She even had the audacity to say that patriotic millionaires should cut me a check. The hypocrisy is stunning.
And speaking of New York politics, there's been some concerning developments with socialist candidates.
Yes, Zohran Mamdani, a self-proclaimed socialist, won the New York City mayoral Democratic primary by 12 points against former mayor Andrew Cuomo. His platform includes a 2% wealth tax on residents earning above $1 million annually, raising the corporate tax rate to 11.5%, and creating city-owned grocery stores.
City-owned grocery stores? How would that work?
Well, here's the funny part. According to the Washington Examiner, Mamdani misread the city's webpage, thinking there was $140 million available to subsidize private grocery stores that he could use for his socialist stores. Turns out, that money doesn't exist. It was private investment by grocery stores through the Fresh program.
So he wanted to spend private money that wasn't his to spend?
Exactly. And when asked if he would condemn the term globalize the Intifada, Mamdani refused to condemn it, which suggests he supports rebellion against the Jewish state. It's concerning what New Yorkers are electing.
Let's talk about some law enforcement developments. There was a significant case involving a federal judge and ICE agents.
On April 18th, Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan allegedly committed two federal crimes, obstructing a legal proceeding and concealing an individual to prevent arrest. Federal agents were trying to execute a lawful arrest warrant for Eduardo Flores Ruiz, a Mexican national who had been previously removed and was charged with domestic abuse.
A federal judge obstructed ICE agents?
According to court documents, when Judge Dugan learned of the agent's presence in the courthouse hallway, she confronted and ordered federal agents to leave. She was 65 years old and should have known better, especially as a sitting judge.
There were also some major corruption cases involving government contracts.
Yes, on June 12th, the DOJ released information about a USAID official and three corporate executives who pleaded guilty to a bribery scheme involving over $550 million in contracts. Roderick Watson, a USAID contracting officer, received bribes valued at more than $1 million, including cash, NBA suite tickets, and mortgage down payments.
And there was another major defense contractor settlement?
L3 Technologies, which does business as L3 Harris, agreed to pay $62 million to resolve False Claims Act allegations for submitting false cost and pricing data on defense contracts. This involved their Communication System West division violating the Truth in Negotiations Act.
Let's talk about some international developments. There was significant news about Iran's nuclear program.
On June 25th, the CIA released a statement confirming that Iran's nuclear program has been severely damaged by targeted strikes. They said credible intelligence indicates several key Iranian nuclear facilities were destroyed and would have to be rebuilt over years. Even Iran's foreign ministry spokesman admitted, "Our nuclear installations have been badly damaged."
What kind of damage are we talking about?
According to the U.S. Air Force, 7 B-2 bombers flew directly from Whiteman AFB to Iran. 3 B-2s dropped 6 30,000-pound precision-guided bombs on the Fordo enrichment plant. Satellite photos show massive holes and craters in the mountain. It's been completely flattened compared to previous images.
Finally, let's talk about President Trump's policy initiatives. There was an interesting executive order on Made in America labeling.
On March 13th, President Trump signed an executive order requiring products that advertise as Made in America to actually be manufactured in the United States. This protects consumers from deceptive origin claims and safeguards businesses that genuinely invest in American workers and manufacturing.
That seems like common sense policy.
It addresses a real problem where foreign manufacturers, especially online sellers, are increasingly marketing their goods as U.S.-made to appeal to patriotic consumers. Americans who intentionally choose to buy American-made products should have confidence about what those claims actually mean.
Looking at all these stories together, what are the major themes emerging from the first half of 2026?
Several clear patterns emerge. First, there's a significant shift within the Republican Party toward the America First movement, with establishment figures being challenged or replaced. Second, we're seeing immediate economic consequences when states implement wealth taxes. Capital flight is real and immediate.
And what about the corruption cases?
The corruption investigations show that DOGE and increased oversight are having real effects. These cases involving USAID, defense contractors, and even organizations like the SPLC suggest there's been systematic abuse that's finally being exposed and prosecuted.
The SPLC case in particular seems to represent something larger about institutional credibility.
Absolutely. When an organization that has positioned itself as the authority on hate groups is allegedly funding those same groups, it raises fundamental questions about how many other institutions have been operating under false pretenses. It's a credibility crisis that goes beyond just one organization.
And internationally, the Iran strikes show a very different approach to foreign policy.
The precision and effectiveness of those strikes, combined with the transparency about the results, demonstrates a return to peace through strength. The fact that Iran's own officials are admitting the severe damage shows this wasn't just symbolic, it was strategically devastating.
As we head into the second half of 2026, what should people be watching for?
The key test will be whether John Thune brings the SAVE Act to the Senate floor. For many conservatives, this is essential to safeguarding elections. Failure to advance it would confirm what critics argue, that he's out of step with the party's base. We're also likely to see more corruption cases as investigations continue. And economically? If the current trends continue, trade deficit improvements, job growth favoring American citizens, and real wage growth for blue-collar workers, Democrats could face serious challenges in upcoming elections. The contrast with the previous administration's policies is becoming stark.
Well, it's certainly been an eventful first half of the year. From Senate leadership battles to shocking corruption indictments, from immediate consequences of tax policy to precision military strikes. 2026 has delivered political developments that would have seemed unthinkable just a few years ago. The patterns we're seeing suggest we're in the middle of a significant political realignment, and the second half of the year promises to be just as consequential. Thanks for joining us for this peer-reviewed politics news update.